to live righteously. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 304, which is a lot of hours. If you could see Dave Colley, my guest here, he just did this wincing, painful face. That's 8 years of my life that are recorded, so I don't have to get them back. But
That's your journal.
Yeah, that's...
That's your journal.
It is actually interesting. In the opening moments of a lot of the shows that we do that are available in podcast form, be careful not to call it a podcast or people will come after you for this. Like I remark about different things about, like with my kid when I was still married and with my ex-wife. And it's interesting as I've gone back and listened to some of the episodes, I'm like, oh yeah. And in some cases it's, what was really going on was this other thing that I didn't talk about at all. And then other times where it's like, oh, I really remember that sweet moment. Episode 304, I mentioned Dave Colley. He is the producer of the Cold Podcast. He is the voice that you hear and the investigative reporter. I'm assuming that would be what you would most like to be called.
I don't worry about job titles. I've done a lot of different things in radio, but I think currently my title is like executive digital such and such. Whatever. I'm a reporter.
Right.
Yeah.
For beginning to end. And we'll get into some of that, what led you to do the Cold Podcast. People that are listening to this, though, if they don't know about what I would call a phenomenon in the respectful way of phenomenon, tell them what it is.
Yeah, sure. Cold is a podcast that I launched as a result of investigation into the disappearance of Susan Powell. This was a mother of two boys, a wife, a working mother from West Valley City. She vanished in December of 2009. Her body has never been located. She is believed to have been murdered by her husband, Josh Powell, who famously, I mean, this was all over the news at the time, he moved to Washington State a short time after his wife's disappearance, holed up with his dad, Steve Powell, who turned out to be very unlikable character, and ultimately killed himself and his boys as police were closing in on him in February of 2012.
So light. It's just a light, kind of fun, cheery,
yeah.
Self-help.
Yeah. It's heavy. I mean, it is, and that's, so one of the challenges with a story like this, and I mean, I'll just dive into it here,
yeah.
Right, is I was fascinated by it because I was working as a reporter in this market when all this happened, followed blow by blow, every
happened
move of the
Salt
case.
Lake. You said this market.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm still so local radio minded. Here in Utah, like it was a big deal.
Yeah,
and it always bugged me that a lot of the questions that I wanted answered were never answered. I mean, the police, when they declared the case cold about a year after Josh killed himself, they released a bunch of their case files, and at the time it was kind of like, well, we're done.
Yeah,
you know, sorry, have at it, guys. And so I kind of took that as a bit of a, you know, that was a bit of a glove slap to the face. Like they threw down the gauntlet and I was like, okay, I'm going to dive into this, and started reading, but there was so much information.
Give me a context on year.
Yeah. So, 2013, May 2013, they declare the case cold.
Okay.
I immediately turned a story for KSL. So I had been at KSL for a little over a year at that point. And in reading through some of the documents, I realized, oh, they have like video recordings of Josh going through this interview the day after, you know, he comes back from this improbable camping trip out in the desert in the middle of winter. Wouldn't that video be interesting to see?
Yeah.
So did a public records request through West Valley, got that video, did a story on it, and like that should have satisfied me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made it worse. Like,
yeah.
I was like, I have more questions now. Like, I want to understand, like, why was he not arrested during this interview? It's so crazy. And so 2014 was kind of when the seed planted in the back of my mind that the only way to really tell the story right was going to be to do it as a podcast. Like,
really? So that early? So that's before or right around the time of, like, Serial, one of the ones that as people listen to this, though... thematically not the same, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Cold gets lumped in as true crime,
right.
which is fair, but my approach to it was never to be like, I'm going to make Serial 2, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that. I wanted this case to be a story that stood on its own, and people would either, you know, listen to it or not based on the merits of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so what happened was I went to a conference for a group called IRE, which is Investigative Reporters and Editors. I sat in...
It sounds like a room full of people just asking questions and you're not right, being satisfied.
Asking questions of each other, right?
Oh, yeah. No, what is it that you just said? Now, hold on. And
I don't trust you.
Nowhere. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A bunch of wannabe detectives. But I was listening to this print reporter from, you know, some other place in the country talking about how she made a podcast out of some story that she had worked. And as a radio guy, you know, I worked in radio for a long time. That just chapped me. I mean, that just drove me nuts because I felt like if anybody should be in a position to tell interesting stories in an audio format, it should be radio. And, you know, I don't want to throw stones at the company I used to work for, but
do it.
but it felt like nobody from like traditional radio was taking on this kind of investigative story, unless you work for like NPR, right? Public radio was doing it. Nobody in like commercial news radio was doing it. And so I went to my boss at the time, my news director, and was like, look, we've got the story of all stories that we know the appetite is there. People want more information about this story. We've got so much documentation already. We can turn this thing into a podcast.
Yeah, plus you've got a very talented Dave Cawley who has an insatiable desire to find out more and more. You know, I'm coming to you and I'm willing to do this.
It was a pitch, but like I pump the brakes anytime this turns into let's talk about me, because that's not what it was. I mean,
well, I'm going to talk about you.
Well,
though.
You can, but I'm going to be uncomfortable. The people who are connecting the story are doing it because the story is interesting. It's not because of me.
But hold on, don't do that innate like member of the church thing where it's like, guys, it's just gifts, you know, that we're... No, listen, if you did it poorly, can I tell you what people wouldn't be listening to? This. If you did a bad job about it, I would have listened for 10 seconds and been like, cool story,
boop,
bad job.
Turn it off.
Next one.
So
take the compliment. Now go ahead.
I appreciate it. When I launched this idea to my boss, there was no... And credit to her, Cheryl Worsley.
Uh-huh.
You know, she immediately was like, you're right, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
But the problem was I was doing my day job.
Sure.
And how are you going to give me the time necessary to do this job the way it needs to be done and still do, you know, 8-9 hours a day producing the afternoon news on KSL? Like, it's just not going to happen. So it took us about a year to actually start making any forward progress on the idea.
Like, great idea. We'll come back to it.
Yeah.
How frustrating.
It was.
And that's no sort of, I know Cheryl very well.
Yeah.
That's no sort of discredit to her. That's just like, yeah, great.
Right.
And hold on to that. We'll come back.
And it's an unproven thing, right? Like, can this be successful? I don't know. We think so.
And what does successful mean?
Does what
that
does
people
that
listening
like?
To it, or is that profitable? Those kind
right.
of things. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I stuck it in the back of my head and was like, well, I'd love to do it, but and I told my boss this explicitly, I can't work for free.
Right.
But then I did. So in 2015, I'm like, dang it, this has got to get moving. And so
what was it that made you really want to do it so much? Because there's not all stories that would do that to you. Certainly there are unanswered questions in lots of cases, you know, that you could, if you really were just like, I need answers to all questions,
right,
that would drive you. But was there something in particular with this?
I think there was opportunity. Certainly that's a big part of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. I know the goods are there, and if I, you know, pursue this, it will likely turn into something, interesting. Like, I honestly think, like, just the reporter in me wants to share information, and mm-hmm. I've got a whole bunch of information and no good way to share it.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of cases that I know about that I would love to do this to, but I don't have, you know, thousands of pages of case file that police have already handed me. So,
right.
So I feel like I kind of had a head start with mm-hmm. this one.
Plus a passion.
Yeah. And the more I started reading about it, you know, doing things like, for instance, so on my own personal time, I'm starting to read
for free
Steve Powell's personal journals, and it's like horror of horrors.
Now for people, again, because there may be some people that are coming to this who have no idea who Susan Cox Powell is, Josh Powell, Steve Powell. In my mind, there's an instant visceral reaction when you say Steve Powell.
Yeah.
He is the father of Josh, the
The suspect in our case.
The suspect. Yeah. I don't do very well at being careful. I would be like, you know, the guy who killed his wife. And you're like, well, allegedly, and
the podcast is pretty clear that he is the sole suspect. Yeah. I mean, there's no other really reasonable scenario from any of the research that I've done that points to anybody else. So I mean, we make the assumption that Josh killed his wife based on all of the available information.
Yep.
I hesitate to, you know, call him a wife murderer, but we can safely call him a murderer because he killed his two kids.
Sure.
Steve Powell, his dad, is a completely unlikable character. This is a man who is delusional, lives in a fantasy world in his own head, believes that his son's wife is in love with him,
mm-hmm.
that they will at some point be together, and that she will move in and be his queen of the house, as he calls her. He does all kinds of horrible things in terms of photographing her, taking video of her surreptitiously,
writing songs about her.
I mean, just it goes into so many weird places. So you can imagine, several hundred, a couple thousand pages of this man's personal journal over the course of, a decade, a lot of it explicit, him describing his fantasies. This is not light after dinner reading.
No. But you did it after dinner and for $0.
But I did. and there are only a small handful of people who have done that. Myself, probably some of the detectives.
Uh-huh.
Maybe a prosecutor here or there. And so the more information I learned about the case, the more I just became driven to turn something out of this. There's got to be, for as awful as this story was, all the awful things Steve Powell was doing, the horror of, this woman who's disappeared and still not been found, the two boys who were brutally murdered, like, can something positive possibly come out of this? So that's part of what drove me as well. It's like, we never got the justice of actually sticking Josh in a courtroom in front of a jury and having police make their case, and then letting, the process work the way it should. So in a sense, I kind of feel like the podcast is a way to do that publicly, to let people, have that feeling that, like, now we get it. Now we have some sense of justice.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit more about that. And then obviously with this being the cultural hall, there is a bend with the church, an overarching, as we met, I think it was after you'd published just only the first episode,
mm-hmm.
I said, there's definitely going to be some correlation. And you're like, no, you cannot discuss this story without talking about its relation to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, heretofore known as the church, because I'm not saying that a million
every
times.
Every time. Well, and I get knocked for saying it quite often.
Yeah, within it.
In the show.
But we'll talk about that and how those themes kind of relay with this whole story and more about Cold Podcast coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. Are you experiencing panic attacks, nausea, or diarrhea? Is your computer not turning on? Is it running super slow? Is your internet crawling? Or is it just randomly crashing? You could be suffering from ICS, Irritable Computer Syndrome. I want you to ask yourself, when was the last time you had your PC cleaned? Over time, Windows, updates, spyware, malware, and dangerous viruses will make your computer run like crap. You need to bring in your laptop or desktop PC, no matter what brand it is, and let me run a 100% free virus scan, malware, and spyware scan on your computer. Don't wait and risk losing everything. Now, why are we doing this for free? Because we want to impress you so much that if you or any of your friends or family need a computer, service, or phone repair, you come to PC Laptops first. Get into any one of our locations right now or check us out at PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, where computers start at $7.99. PC Laptops, we love you!
Time in the second block of the Cultural Hall. We're continuing with Dave Colley. If you love listening to episodes like this and think, man, I'd like to be a part of a secret Facebook group that only people who sponsor the Cultural Hall via Patreon are a part of. Well, you can. You can go to patreon.com/theculturalhall, and any amount of pledge allows you to have access to that Facebook group. You won't find it. If you search it on Facebook, you're not going to see it.
It's
secret.
Hidden.
Actually, it's sacred, not secret.
Mm.
Let's just talk about it that way. You can be a part of the Cultural Hall via Patreon and take a second. Share this with your friends if they want to know more about the Cold Podcast, or they like hearing stuff about Mormon culture, Mormon people, those kind of things surrounding the community and the culture. Please share this show available in podcast form with those folks. Dave, you mentioned reading the 1,000 or so pages of Steve Powell, the father of Josh Powell, the alleged wife murderer, but confirmed murderer of his kids.
Talking like a reporter. So proud of
you. It's exhausting. So careful, tiptoeing.
Really,
I'm just like, he killed her, right? Can't we just, no, we can't. How do you let that stuff not like just affect you? It's explicit, some of it, as you mentioned. It's filthy, you know, at very least. It's disturbing. Like, how do you protect yourself from that, or do you?
So that's a great question, and I've been asked before, but I still don't have a great answer for it. Mm-hmm. You know, working in news, I feel like I've been exposed to a lot of pretty awful stuff over the years, mm-hmm. and have developed a pretty good ability to compartmentalize, stick that, you know, kind of the back of your mind and ignore it. But getting immersed with this story has been different. Just the nature of it, the how deep I've gone, taking it home with me, some of those kinds of things. And, you know, I'm not in therapy or anything like mm-hmm. that, but I have...
Maybe should be.
I've noticed it's taken a toll.
And really?
Yeah,
talk about that.
So, I mean, some of it's hard to kind of put into words, but you find yourself consumed by thoughts that you don't expect. You know, I've woken up 2 or 3 in the morning sometimes from dead sleep, having dreamt about Susan Powell, or just you can't sleep because you have, you know, questions, your mind spinning so many different directions.
Some new piece of something that you're like, oh my gosh, and what if this means?
And you're just, you're rolling it over and over again. And it's something that in talking to, you know, some of the detectives and things who have worked on this case, like they have that same experience
mm-hmm.
Because they've been so invested. You know, I have images burned into my brain of Steve Powell from viewing some of his videos that will probably never go away, that are, you know, not things anybody wants.
Not things that are going to be released, I hope, too.
Hanging around, no. And that's a great point. You know, I went through the process of reviewing a lot of... I haven't seen everything. Like, I'll stick that right out there. There are some things that I looked at just the description of, and I was like, I don't need to see that, first of all. You know, Steve recording himself doing certain things, you know, it's like, nobody needs to see that.
Yeah.
But in filtering through some of the videos and things that I did, yeah, I was certainly exposed to Steve being Steve.
Ugh.
And very clearly, I feel a responsibility to not victimize Susan any farther than she already has been.
Okay.
So if Steve is talking about doing something explicit, you know, in his fantasies with Susan, I don't need to put that out there, because right. all that serves to do is to hurt Susan.
Sure.
It doesn't help us understand who Steve is more than we already do, right? We all get who Steve is.
Right.
But
you have to allow some of that so that
yes.
we get context of why does everyone say that, you know, Josh's dad was such a creep? It's like, well,
here's why. But it is flowing through a filter.
Yeah.
And I made a decision early on in the process that this podcast, Cold, would not be explicit.
Mm-hmm.
So 4-letter words and things we're going to bleep. I'm going to be very selective about the segments of, you know, Steve's journals, for instance, that we put in the podcast.
Let me ask you, how much of that is because it's a KSL or church-owned kind of product, or was that on your discretion?
That's entirely on me.
Oh, really?
I'm certain I could have gone to my bosses and said, I want to go full bore with this thing. Mm-hmm. And it probably would have prompted that discussion. But morally and ethically, this was something that I felt, just from doing my own research, was important.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. It certainly allows it to be more accessible to a broader group of people, right? People that would be like, man, I don't want to listen to this explicit thing. Can I still get the gist of this? Yes.
My standard, funny as it may sound, has been, I want my mom to be able to listen to it. and not have to explain to my mom like why you know I've put in descriptions of you know Steve
doing things.
Well, Steve, an unsavory character, and it seems like you keep going there. But Josh, like, equally as despicable.
Yes.
So I want to go off on that a little bit. We talked about that, and as I've listened to as of this recording, there are 10 episodes that are out. A quick question that everyone will kill me if I don't ask. Any idea how many that there will be to this series?
That is a question everybody asks,
okay.
And I think I need to update like my Twitter profile to just put it in my description. I have an idea in my head how many it will run, but we're not being concrete with that yet because it's a bit of an open door.
Sure.
I'm still, even though I'm like frantically producing episodes right now, I'm also on the back end doing additional investigative work.
Right.
And we don't want to say it's going to be X number of episodes, hit X, and then go, but wait a minute, we still have all this other interesting stuff. So we don't want to create like a false expectation,
sure,
I guess is what
sure,
I'm getting
sure, sure.
at.
Or like a 7-hour last episode because you said there would be 20.
Right.
And it's like, well, we have the commitment to the people that said,
To be perfectly honest with you, I mean, chronologically, you can see how the podcast is progressing.
Right.
It will catch up to current day.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, what becomes of it? You know, if there's no resolution on this story and I'm still actively working on it, how does it change? I don't know the answer to that yet. So we'll figure it out when we get there.
And I want to talk about some of that stuff because I think it's so fascinating how podcasts create kind of movements.
Mm.
So make sure we get to that. Let's couch it.
Okay.
Put it right
Got
there.
It.
The themes of the church within the family dynamic between Josh and Susan, and then certainly with Steve and also Chuck and Judy Cox. Wherever you want to,
you
want to take it.
So let's kind of set the table for somebody who's not familiar with where all the players sit. Susan is staunchly faithful. She comes from and forgive me because I'm going to use this term even though it's discouraged. Currently, she comes from a Mormon family.
Uh-huh.
Her parents, raised her in the church. And when she married Josh was faithfully attending a singles ward in Washington. They met at Institute. So, you know, clearly her indication was he is also a member. They shared this. But Josh's dad, Steve, even though he served a mission, went to BYU, is staunchly anti and is actively trying to keep his kids out of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Susan doesn't have a full grasp of this when she meets and marries Josh because she's, quite frankly, she's young.
Yeah.
And, you know, she gets married at 19. Josh is about 5 years older than her. Within a couple of years of marriage, Josh is pulling away. And there's pretty good indication that within, you know, 3-4 years, he has no testimony, no faith in God, wants nothing to do with the church.
Mm-hmm.
Susan stays right down the line. So this is a major source of conflict for them in their marriage. And that's what you hear, especially, I mean, really strongly in the first few episodes, two and three.
I'm going to go to church. I'm praying, hoping that he'll join me.
Yeah.
Trying to make deals to get him to come. You know, where he said he'll come a couple times a month and I'll leave him alone if he stays home. These things that are very much that negotiation that take place in households where one is faithful and the other is like, I don't know.
Which I think is pretty familiar, right?
Yeah.
And like, that's something that I imagine a lot of listeners to the podcast connect with because, yeah, that's a thing that we experience in our own lives, right? So,
which is also sort of the eerie part, though, because it's like, all right, so this is the thing that exists in my life. And then you start looking at your partner and you're like, are you going to go camping?
It's December. Why are you going to the desert?
I mean, like, it almost becomes that thing where it's, where to some that I've had that discussion with, I don't think to that level where they feel like their life is in jeopardy, but certainly where it's like, well, is this the beginning point of an unraveling?
Right. And where is the line between a disagreement and abuse?
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is something that we see huge between Josh and Susan, is that Josh is clearly abusing Susan. And all of her friends see it. All, you know, her family sees it. They're telling Susan, get out, get out, get out. She's thinking about getting out at some points, but she goes to the temple and prays, spends a whole day praying, and comes away from that experience feeling like she needs to stay and she needs to actually be the one to reactivate Josh, to bring him back to his marriage vows, to bring him back to, you know, his eternal family. And it's something that, as a storyteller, as I'm taking Susan's words and putting them out there, my personal feelings on any of that, right? Mm-hmm. They've got to go to the side, because you have to be true to what Susan's thinking and feeling. So, you know, somebody who's not a member of the church, who doesn't have strong religious convictions, might hear that and go, "Well, obviously, you know, she was wrong." Mm-hmm. How am I supposed to argue with Susan, in her own words, saying, "I went to the temple and I prayed about it, and the impression that I got was this."
Yeah.
Right. So,
I can tell you as a listener how I felt at the gym. What are you doing? What?
And that's fair.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. But yeah, so these religious issues become a little thorny because a lot of people, I think, that are listening, just based on feedback I've received, some people feel like I'm painting, you know, anybody who leaves the church is a Steve Powell or Josh Powell. Other people who are like, I just, like, why are you, you know, presenting this faith that Susan, you know, leans on in this way? So I can't please everybody.
No.
Ultimately, my job is to try to be true to the words and actions of the people who lived this experience.
Hard?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very difficult.
Because I mean, as much as you're like, I'm a reporter and I appreciate that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you feel something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you don't go, oh, you know, I'm a reporter. I've removed my emotions.
And I very clearly in the prelude, so we did a little short episode to kind of explain what this podcast was. It's called Prelude. And I reference in there, like, I grew up in the same church, right? And I think
that being the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Thank you very much. I think that's important to put out for a couple of reasons. One, you can't tell that story of their relationship, of their marriage, without acknowledging and understanding the influence that faith and religion played in it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the culture, the religion is somewhat unique. And so having a quote-unquote insider's perspective, I hope, allows me to interpret for listeners who might not know some of that very well. Mm-hmm. You know, and the other part of it is, like, look, I've lived in Utah my whole life. I grew up in the religion, but as a teenager, I stopped going to church. And everybody in my—
People there, or you were just like, meh?
That's a whole other, that's a complicated discussion.
That's a different episode.
Yeah. I mean, basically, as a teenager, I never felt the feelings of testimony that I think a lot of people—
That sustain you through that time.
That talk about, right?
Yeah.
You know, my close friends at the time were in a similar position. They both, you know, reactivated, served missions. I never did. Mm-hmm. My dad was the bishop, right? And everybody in my immediate family, still active members. So I'm, you know, quote unquote black sheep.
Sure.
But at the same time, I never went so far away in terms of, I still live a very Mormon lifestyle.
Right.
So
even your haircut and your plaid shirt.
Yeah. Well,
tucked, you know, into your khaki pants.
Yeah.
Just giving people the visual perspective.
What I wear at home, what I wear at work are two different things. KSL is a, you know, it's a great place to work.
Yeah.
So I feel like when I was doing all this research and I'm reading all these things, you know, smart reporters on the national level have taken stabs at this case. Mm-hmm. It's been on, you know, Dateline, it's been on all this stuff. People have written books about it. I don't know that any of them have done so from a perspective of, like, I get what this marriage was.
Right.
Because I understand the culture and the influence and the pressures. And so,
especially those things like you're talking about going to the temple, right? That seeking God's divine intervention or assistance in those things, right? Like,
right.
I feel like this is done. But if God says to me in his temple, in his building, that I should stick this out, all right.
Right.
All these red flags, you know, I'm over the red flags. I'll do as I feel prompted.
And you'll see like cable shows about this where they'll have, you know, reenactors, right?
Right.
And like the reenactor for Susan will be wearing a cross.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, no,
missed it.
You got it wrong. Because there's like conventional media Christianity,
right,
that doesn't accurately reflect what like the you know the Latter-day Saint
and so much about you know she being married young and the desire to have kids because it's multiply and replenish and it's the stick-to-itiveness of you know what this may not be perfect but we'll you know we made a promise not only till death do us part but until you know for time and all eternity
right
like there are nuances to that that I you know. As now I think about other opportunities where I've seen this story played out, that you're right. They miss the nuance of there is more to it than just they were married in a temple. Oh, well, cool. Another church building. Nope. Not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and strange things too, when you really slow down and look at it, you know, somebody who's approaching this from a national level who doesn't understand the religion, not only are they not going to understand, oh, you know, they were married in the Portland Temple. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. They're also not going to understand, like, Josh's sister Jennifer was married in the Portland Temple, and Josh was trying to replicate what his sister did, mm-hmm. which is, it's a little different, right? It's a little strange. And, you know, what is it about Josh hanging around at singles wards trying to find any girl to give him the time of day mm-hmm. and the way that he is presenting himself when he is dating as, you know, Peter Priesthood doing everything straight. I mean, he is, if you go back and listen to his audio journals.
Which are creepy, by the way. And if people haven't listened to the Cold Podcast, one of the things that I love and that you absolutely, I won't say lucked out because you knew that that was an element of it, but hearing Josh's own voice, hearing Susan Cox Powell own voice in these audio diaries is so creepy and so fantastic that as you know from that audio reporter I'm just like oh my gosh wow. how great is this
yeah I mean and so you listen to those recordings and a lot of them most all of them were made during a period when Josh was extremely active in the church. And, you know, he's talking the talk in a lot of ways.
Right.
But you're also looking at who he was later in his life. And I still have the question of, like, was he being sincere or mm-hmm. was this Josh putting on an act? And I think there's a really strong case to be made that it's like, no, he was weird. He was a narcissist. He couldn't get any girls to like him. He recognized that, you know, a young Latter-day Saint woman would be compliant and that he could use the religion to kind of, I don't want to say set a trap, but he definitely could hook an impressionable young Latter-day Saint woman where maybe somebody from outside the church wouldn't give him the time.
Interesting. You think it was that intentional?
Yeah, I mean, maybe subconsciously.
Okay.
And like I said, I go back and forth on it because if you look at his life before that period of time, mm-hmm. no interest in religion. Hmm. So there's this real brief period from like 97 to 2000 where he's very active. And there's a dip in the middle of that. And it's after he meets and begins dating a young woman named Catherine Terry, mm-hmm. who is his only other serious romantic interest before he meets and marries Susan Powell. They are very similar to one another in terms of, you know, kind of their experiences, their backgrounds, the fact that they, you know, they're both 19. Mm-hmm. When they meet Josh isolates Catherine from her family, begins, you know, manipulating her financially. And Catherine manages to escape,
yeah.
where Susan just went in full bore. But while he was dating Catherine, Josh stops attending church. And he later talks about, you know, the time that I fell away and the trouble that I had during that period. So he immediately goes right back to being super active. Mm. And I think it establishes a bit of a pattern, right? He's using his religion to get something that he wants. And then once he no longer needs that thing, he doesn't have to practice anymore.
You know, within one of the early episodes, you talked to Catherine. Yep. How grateful is she that she got out of that?
Catherine, my gosh, that poor woman, because she lived with Josh for 6 months in an apartment. Mm. And when she got away, she didn't realize fully what that decision meant. Mm-hmm. But I think now with everything that she knows, everything we've seen, she can certainly look back and people have told her, and I think it's absolutely right that, you know, she very well could have ended up in Susan's position.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And thankfully, she met a young man shortly after she left Josh. She moved to Utah. They've married. They've been married ever since. They have a beautiful family. And Catherine told me that a lot of the memories that she had from that time, she had buried. Mm. And nobody had ever pieced together who she was or how she was connected to this story until I sent her a message on Facebook last summer.
And, which I've got to...
And I basically said, hey, look, this is who I am. I know who you are, uh-huh. right? I know that you had a relationship with Josh Powell. I want to talk to you about it.
How is that received?
Honestly, to her credit, she called me 30 minutes later.
Interesting.
Because I expected to hear nothing.
Right. I would expect it to be like, no, creepo, I'm done. That's in the past. He's passed away. I don't want to talk about it. Leave me alone.
And Catherine was not the only romantic interest of Josh's who I reached out to. And, I spoke to some off the record. They're not included in the podcast because they didn't want to be included. And I understand that. So I have a lot of respect for Catherine being willing to stand up. And at the time I approached her, Steve Powell was still alive. He's since died. But one of the things that people who knew Josh back then repeatedly expressed to me was they're still scared of Steve.
Sure.
And Catherine said, you know what? I don't have anything to lose. We should talk about it. Mm. So, yeah, I think she certainly deals with that question of what if it had been me?
It's a fascinating story all over the place, and clearly with having there be 10 hours of content so far already released, and many more hours that you won't tell me how many, even though I want to know. But
I'm being coy, sorry.
He's so coy. we're not going to be able to give everyone that idea, so do check that out. It's thecoldpodcast.com. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. And subscribe
including
to
this
it.
One, by the way.
Yeah. Exactly. But I want to talk to you now, kind of the experience with it, and then we'll spend the last block talking a little bit more about you. You put this thing out. You don't know how it's going to be. You essentially go to your boss. You say, this is a great idea. Okay, I trust you. You're working for free. Okay, well, I'll start to pay you a few shekels here and there, you know, enough to get by, yep. as I assume it.
Well, I will say KSL, my employer, has been very gracious in, I made salary for the better part of a year working on this thing with absolutely no return. So I'm not hurting.
Right.
It was extra work in my free time, but it's not like I'm destitute. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So they were paying you for that
yes.
time. Okay.
No, not for my home time, but I was working a job here through the period.
They're like, hey, are you doing stuff? Oh, yeah, no. I'm putting together stuff. We got episodes. Yeah, no, it's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
You launch this thing and it's huge. It's massive. It becomes this behemoth. That I don't think even you expected. Is that fair to say, or were you like, no, I nailed this?
I still have not wrapped my head around it.
Talk about it.
Okay, so let's go back to November 14th of 2018.
Yeah, I love the reporter. Okay,
believe me.
Let's get some guitar music underneath.
There is a life before cold, and there's a life after cold for me. Okay. I mean, this is probably going to be defining for me. And that date floated a lot because we originally were going to launch this thing in September, then it was October, then it was November.
Pushback just not ready to go?
There were a number of factors at play, stuff that's above my pay grade. There's some competitive pressure knowing that other people are sniffing around trying to get some of what we already have. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to wait to put it out. But ultimately, the decision is 14th of November, we're dropping episode. We put it out there. I think in the back of my head, maybe we'll get a few hundred. Maybe if we break into the thousands of listeners, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of podcasts in the world right now.
Had you done any sort of podcasting beforehand?
None.
Okay.
None. I listened, right? So my experience putting this together was basically, I know the shows that I like, and I know what I think will be good in my head. Mm-hmm. I actually put myself on a moratorium where I said, I'm not listening to any true crime podcasts, which there, again, are a lot, right? And the reason I did that, even though there are a lot of really good ones I could steal ideas from, I didn't want to be influenced to a point where someone was like, oh, this just sounds like a knockoff of some other show. So I did that. I had produced most of episode one. Before I ever actually had talked to Catherine, I had to go back and recut the thing. I mean, rewrite huge portions of it. My boss was basically the only person who had heard it. and really knew what it was. Mm-hmm. So a huge show of faith on KSL's part to just say, put this thing out there.
And by put this thing out here, I mean, it is a machine when you do stuff for KSL. For people who don't know Utah and who don't know news media here, like it was, you know, you were on all the radio shows. You were on the nightly news. I received text messages that let me know traffic updates and news updates. And it was like, hey, we're launching this new podcast. So what
happened there was obviously I had come across, you know, video. We had the audio journal. We knew there was good stuff.
Right.
Even if a lot of people in KSL weren't privy to what all I had, we selectively went out to say, you know, a couple people from TV, and we're like, you know what? You're going to want a piece of this.
Right.
Same thing on the radio. Same thing with, you know, the Deseret News. Hey, we want to provide you with stories that will accompany our podcast that we think will be interesting to your readers.
Right.
And so strategically, that was something that we identified very early on would be part of our path to hopeful success, was getting this in front of as many people as possible. KSL, in a lot of ways, can do that better than anybody else, just based on having ownership of all these different properties.
Sure. So did you get more than 100 downloads?
We got a few more than 100 downloads. I was sitting at my desk, and my boss's office is just right across. I mean, it's, you know, 20 feet away, if that. And it was like early afternoon, and I've kind of been like obsessively clicking on the stats to see where our downloads are. I'm like, wow, this is going
reaching into the thousands.
It's going
as I
well.
Understand, right?
Tens of thousands,
cool.
Right? Like, this is way better than I ever could have expected.
Right.
And Cheryl laughs and claps her hands, right? It's just, ah, oh my gosh. And I turned to her, door to her office is open. I was like, what? And she said, we're number 3 on iTunes. And
shut the front door.
Right? Grab my phone, pull it up, you know, you look, and oh my gosh, we're number 3. And then an hour later, she does the same thing. Uh-huh. We're number 2.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the day, we were number 1. And we stayed there
for about... It's so fun to watch you be so uncomfortable as you talk about this.
It's like I have no words for this.
Yeah.
This is beyond anything I ever could have expected. And you're blown away, right?
Yeah.
And so you're kind of riding high, right? You're going home that day and like, I am hot stuff. Uh-huh. And then in the back of your mind, there's the little voice that tells you like, don't get too high on yourself. And so I took that as a bit of a mantra, is like, no, I've got a job to do. Like, episode 1 success doesn't mean a dang thing, right?
Yeah.
I have to put out episode 2 in a week, and then episode 3 a week after that.
Yeah.
And there's way too much work to do to sit here and think about how great you are. So I stepped away from, you know, checking where we were in the rankings, and we fell, right?
Sure.
We fell back. But we've hung around, I think, in like top 20, top 50 for the most part.
Which is huge.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And it continues to grow with every episode. I keep waiting for it to kind of like reach a point where people are like, okay, we get it. We've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of these true crime podcasts, they run 6 or 8 episodes and then they're done.
Right.
And I'm at 10 and I'm not close to
right.
I've got a lot more to come.
Yeah. As I listen to different ones, I'm like, yeah, okay. I found more about a person, but we didn't progress chronologically anywhere in this one. So this may be a much longer series than I think I had ever imagined.
It's a slow burn is what I, you know, have described it as for
That's
a long
right, Mark,
time.
Be careful.
Sorry. But no, it is an investment. Let me put it that way. Somebody, and in fact, I said this in the prelude, was like, you know, I'd be honored if you join me, because if you step in episode 1 and you've listened all the way through episode 10, you've spent a lot of time with me, and we've got a lot more to go. That's not something I take for granted. So, you know, it's something where I'm humbled, and I hope that comes through. That, like, the idea that I'm going to put this podcast out there and it's going to rocket to number 1 and I'm going to sit here and talk about how great I am makes me incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah. Let's take a break for a second. I want to come back and talk about what I think is an awesome sort of new age thing in the power of podcasting. And then a little bit about you, my guest, Dave Cawley, and and maybe what's next, if you can even think that far ahead, and maybe some other stuff too we'll pick up. We'll do that in the third block of the Cultural Hall. Hey, you guys, I want to talk to you about bestdjinutah.com. Why, that's the company that I have started for doing my DJing weddings and live events. Whatever you need, I am your guy to do it. So whether you're a lifer or a convert to this podcast show, or you just happen to be listening for the first time, if you are in need of a wedding DJ or an MC for your event, or just a DJ for your business opening, go to bestdjinutah.com. Now, I know it says Utah, but guess what? If you want me to come to your event and you're not in Utah, I'll do that too. You're going to have to pay for me to be there, but I'm more than willing to do that as well. It's bestdjinutah.com. Emails there, phone numbers there. Would love to hear from you and then help you make your event that much better. Look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for supporting the Cultural Hall podcast. But it's a show. You knew that.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
If you haven't yet, you can go and like the Cultural Hall on Facebook. We're there on Twitter. We do the Instagram thing. Pinterest, it's huge.
You're on Pinterest?
Yeah, you bet. We have someone who does it. I don't do it. I love it because I know a lot of people interact there. I need to get it. It's on my... kind of list.
I can only handle so many. I'll tell you what, the one I was not expecting with Cold?
Yeah.
Instagram.
Really?
It's like crazy popular on Instagram.
And are you the Cold podcast on all the social medias?
Yeah.
Okay, so people can follow you there as well.
Yeah. It's like the one thing I didn't expect was like the number of people who they post their, you know, their stories like reacting to listening to an episode.
Oh yeah, no. I know people that are just die hard and anytime. Who is it? Is there a group that I can join?
I wish I could have said that I was smart enough to see that that side of the social media thing coming. Mm-hmm. We didn't do a Pinterest board though.
Yeah.
So maybe that's failure on my part.
You know, an interesting question that I should ask you off mic, but too late. We're started into this. Is there a Facebook group for people who want to discuss this that isn't moderated by you?
One started that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But they were using some of our visual.
So you guys
logo
shut it down?
No, we didn't shut it down. We
sent a strongly worded email.
We actually stepped in and just asked to help admin it.
Okay.
Which I've not actually done any adminning.
Okay.
Just kind of monitoring. So I imagine there are probably some private groups that we don't know about where people are talking about.
But so there is a place for people to get on and be like, "Can you believe this,
yeah.
Charlie? What?"
The one of the biggest places where the discussion is happening is actually a Facebook group that Susan's close friend Kiersey Hellowell made.
Sure, previous guest here in the Cultural
Hall.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
friends and family of Susan Powell on Facebook, and it's existed since the week of her disappearance, and. I have watched that group for a long time. Obviously, it's relevant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to Kiersey a number of times. I didn't actually join the group until like the week before I launched the podcast because I was trying to be all sneaky and
sure.
not let people know what I was working on. But you know, that's tens of thousands of members, people from across the world. I was told just today that people from Australia are joining because they're listening to the podcast and they want to take part in some of that discussion. So that's crazy.
So that's where I want to go with this. I think the example probably most prevalent in today's culture would be that Serial season one story of Adnan, this guy who maybe killed someone. He gets a second trial. And we don't need to get into all that. Everyone has their theories of whether or not he did, right? But it is powerful the way that not only the host of that particular podcast was able to take time, present it, that it gave this guy a second chance essentially at life. So the golden question, are we going to find Susan Cox Powell at the end of this?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. When I set out to tell this story, actually let me rewind.
Because well, so let me say this.
Yeah.
I know that you don't know where she is. Like, that's not the big
thank
reveal.
You. Thank you. Because anybody anybody who's listening and thinks we're going to have this amazing rat, like, first of all, how horrible of a person would I be if I knew and I held it back for weeks and weeks?
We got a few more episodes we're actually going to do.
No, of course not. Human decency would not allow me to do that. But I am personally fascinated by stories of people who disappear and are never found, particularly here in Utah up in the mountains. And I have been, out of my own personal curiosity, I will go hike miles and miles to go see if I can, you know, learn something or understand better how something like that could happen.
Interesting.
So with like Susan Powell, have I been out to the West Desert? Absolutely.
Sure.
When I set out to do the podcast, I asked myself, what are my goals here? And, you know, there's hashtag Find Susan, which has been around since the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And you would love to be able to say this podcast is going to find Susan. If that happened, it would probably be because of something completely unrelated to anything I've done. It would be somebody who hears about it, who wasn't familiar with the case, who realizes, oh my gosh, I never pieced together A to B to C,
right,
and I'm going to come forward to the police with information. Whatever. Maybe that happens.
So not completely unrelated, but not like...
But I mean, I can't take credit for
that. Right.
So what I outlined as my goals were to shine a light on domestic abuse, mm-hmm. to start, let's start a conversation about, you know, domestic violence. Do you actually have to have, you know, a husband slapping you around to be a victim of domestic abuse?
Right. So let me take this aside. That's one of the things that I appreciate so much about the Cold Podcast. You always, I think it's at the end, right?
Yeah.
Where you're
mm-hmm.
like, if this story sounds familiar, or in other words, if you know, if you think that the abuse that she went through, or you know someone that's like this, like speak out, that kind of thing. I think that's an awesome element of this that I don't think you had to do. I don't think that people would have been like, hey, why aren't they doing a PSA for domestic abuse? But it is a huge credit to who you are as an individual to have that be included.
Honestly, it came up through talking to Susan's friends and family. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, Kiersey, who I mentioned, Susan's dad, Chuck Cox, independent of one another in conversation, mentioned, you know, the reason we still do this is because we hear from people who say, I heard about Susan and it made me realize, you know, myself or somebody I care about is in a bad situation, mm-hmm. and we don't want to end up like Susan, so we made a change. Mm. And I felt like, and you know, I think my boss, Cheryl, when I talked to her about it, likewise felt like this was a very important aspect of the story. Like, we have to have a good reason for telling the story, because it does go into like a really dark place, and we don't want to just be you know, gawking at a car wreck, right? Mm-hmm. We need to have something we can take out of this that will be positive.
So one goal to help domestic abuse awareness,
and then another big one was to recognize there's an intergenerational pattern between not just Josh and his dad, but if you look at Steve, his own parents, right? So you know, Steve Powell, his parents, when they divorced, were playing what they called the kidnapping game. They would take the kids and run off. And I think today a lot of us would call it non-custodial kidnapping.
Right.
You know, some of these games, custody games that get played, you see the way that Steve groomed Josh and his brothers. And then you also see the way Josh was grooming his own sons after Susan disappeared.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, like, how do you break that cycle? And you look at somebody like Josh's sister, Jennifer Graves, who, to her credit, made a conscious decision, like, I'm not going to be part of this family anymore, and removed herself. And then the third goal was, you know, the police department, they had a huge task. And I think it's just human nature to say mistakes were made along the way.
Right.
A lot of people will say, you know, West Valley botched this case. And I don't want to come in with an axe to grind and be like, yeah, we're going to get the police. What I wanted to do was provide a conduit where we can lay out all the information, explore what were some of the missteps, what were some of the areas where maybe they could have done something differently, or what can we learn from the way this case was investigated, mm-hmm. and apply that to future cases so that you don't have this situation repeat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's heavy. I know.
I just think about it and it's like, oh my gosh, it's accomplishing so much within it. you know, we've talked for almost an hour here. What about the whole thing has surprised you the most? Whether it's within the situation, with doing the process, with what's something that you're like, huh?
I didn't expect a couple things. First, the amount of work that was going to be required.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's not about me, but just so people can understand like what it takes to put this together. I've been working 7-day weeks since we launched. And I expect to continue doing that for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And our team grows. Like, yes, this was my passion project. We've drawn other people in to help. So it's not like I'm alone on an island doing this myself. But, you know, a lot of it's in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I didn't expect was I have essentially turned myself into the expert on this case.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of maybe a small number of detectives who worked it themselves, who most of whom are now, you know, not in police work any longer. I kind of know the case better than almost anybody.
Right.
And that's a bizarre situation. So as a reporter, I'm usually going out asking for information. I'm trying to learn and share information. I'm not usually the expert.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a weird role reversal that I didn't anticipate.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is there another percolating idea in your head?
I hinted at it a bit earlier, but I'm hesitant to
you don't have
talk
to,
too
but,
much
but,
about.
But there are other things that you're like, oh.
We've had a number of people come forward and be like, we would really appreciate it if you took this approach with this case or that case.
Interesting.
Some of them I'm aware of. Some of them I've never heard of before. I think part of the challenge is finding a story that has this level of intrigue.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't think I'll ever luck into having a story to tell where we have hours and hours of recorded, you know, journals and things of that nature.
Oh, gosh.
So how do you repeat this? I don't know that I can. What I certainly hope to do is take the same approach
mm-hmm.
to a thorough and thoughtful examination of a case where we don't have resolution and bringing that forward. I'd love to do that.
And then one thing that just for humoring me sakes, I know that you get tons of feedback, positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
Is there and are you willing to share some ounce of feedback that you just were like, this is ridiculous? Obviously, you're not going to be able to quote a particular person because you don't have these things in front of you, and I'm just asking you this question where you're just like, wait, what?
I mean, the religious thing caught me off guard. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who accuse me, you know, we have a subreddit for the podcast, and it's great. Like, I want people to talk about it. Like, mm-hmm. it's flattering to know people are talking about the podcast. Somebody was asking a question on there about, you know, hey, shouldn't it have been disclosed that KSL is owned by the church?
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it never even crossed my mind because I take for granted that here in Utah, that's just understood.
Common knowledge.
People know it.
Sure.
And as the audience, I think, for this podcast has grown and extended out of that, you have some people who, because we are, you know, talking about issues related to the, you know, I'm not talking about the institution of the church much in the podcast, but certainly some of the cultural issues come up. Some people who have felt like, you know, I was trying to hide something or that ethically there was a responsibility there to avoid some perceived conflict of interest where I look at myself and I'm like, there's no conflict here. That caught me off guard.
It does bring up a question in my mind. Has there been anything that you've had to censor? Because I know you've talked about
sure.
like language, but anything that you're like, hey, I'd like to be this. And because you're owned by the church, they've been like, no, we're not. We don't want you to share that.
Absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think that is an important point that, you know, KSL certainly has a reputation in Utah. For the way it reports, but we have editorial independence, and
I think that's vital. I asked that question knowing the answer,
of course.
But I think that people being able to hear that from you, there will be people that'll be like, "Yeah, right,
whatever.
Dave. Sure, they did."
There is no bat phone between the KSL newsroom and church headquarters.
Yeah,
and quite frankly, personally, if somebody from the church came to me and was like, we want you to back off on this, my response would be to push harder to include it.
Right.
Just because then you make me feel like you're trying to hide something.
Right.
So, yeah, professionally, ethically, I would never allow something like that to happen, to go out with my name on it, period.
Good. Yeah. Good. That's exciting.
Yeah.
You won't tell me how many episodes, so I'm not going to ask again. Although
you keep going back.
I just want to know. I want to know how long we're going to know each other for.
Oh, come on.
You and I have a date every Wednesday as the episodes come out. We run on a treadmill.
Yeah.
I get frustrated, and it's so funny to me because, like I sort of shouted out and interrupted you as we recorded this, I do the same as I listen. I'm like, no, come on. Ask this question. Why didn't you ask this question? Are you going to address this? Are we not doing this? Like, the people around me on the treadmill at the gym are like,
what are you talking about?
Crazy.
They think you're Josh Powling talking your audio journals. So the other funny part of that is, like, I had a big picture view of the case when I started writing all these episodes, doing the interviews, right? And certainly you learn things and it changes the way you piece it together, but you know, I don't want to jump so far ahead chronologically in one episode to talk about something that happens way later, even though I know I'm raising a question in the audience's mind about this, right? So it's like, trust me that we're going to get there.
Right.
And certainly if there's something that's missed, you know, I see feedback to episodes and I'm like, ah, crud. I probably should have done a better job of explaining this or that or the other. I'm certainly not perfect, but yeah, we hopefully will answer a lot of those questions. And some of those, come on, man, moments will make a little more sense by the time we reach the end.
People can find it at thecoldpodcast.com, and it's The Cold Podcast on all the social medias.
Yep.
There is a group, maybe, that people can interact with, and certainly the friends of Susan Powell.
Yeah, friends and family of Susan Powell on Facebook.
That you can relay that. And you know, people here, certainly in Utah, just on their regular social media pages, I've seen it enough where it's just like, guys, the latest, have you heard this? The songs that Stephen wrote and sang with Susan Cox Powell, so the father of Josh, singing about his daughter-in-law, that episode, it was...
Yeah. And I'll share, in closing, I'll share this with you. On Twitter yesterday, I was somebody was tagging the Cold Podcast account on a conversation back and forth, and it just made me smile because these two guys who I don't think know each other, both of their Twitter handles, you know, one is like a cougar, the other's a Ute, you know, Ute Dad 41, whatever, and they. Like, they're going back and forth with each other, and it turns into this conversation about, like, how long have you been a Cougar fan? Oh, I've been a Ute fan for 35 years. Yeah. And it's like, they had this moment where they were brought together by Cold, these two rival fan bases, and they had this really, like, polite, respectful interaction that I was like, you know what? Cold's bringing them together. Like, I feel so happy.
I would be remiss. We ask everyone at the end of an episode of the Cultural Hall three questions. The answers are two of them, so I don't even need to ask you. But the third I'll ask, open for your interpretation however you choose to answer it. But we ask people what their favorite part of their faith is. So however you interpret that to be, what would you say?
Easy. One word, family. You know, even though I'm not somebody who regularly attends church, certainly I see faith as holding my family together and my relationship with my parents, with my siblings in a lot of ways is because of that. And, you know, we get along very well and they don't they never disrespect me about my choices and I don't about their choices either. And I think that's wonderful. And I think that's the way our society should be. So faith and family to me are one and the same.
You mean like love?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm not.
I know it's a strange thing to talk about in, you know, in a society where we're supposed to hate one another and yell about how stupid we all are and argue about politics and, you know, why am I not trying to convince them that they shouldn't be, you know, going to church, and why aren't they trying to drag me into church? Right. And it's like, no, we just love one another.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen to it this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen to it next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back.